Hello, and welcome to our program Business News, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Vanessa, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the business section of the San Antonio Express News here on Owl Radio. Our first article is titled Premium Putting Venue Planned by Gabriela Ibarra. A golf entertainment venue designed through the lens of professional golfer Tiger Woods is making its way to San Antonio. Popstroke Entertainment Group announced its plans to open several of its technology-infused golf entertainment venues across the country, including in the Alamo City. The company is owned by Greg Bartoli, Tiger Woods TGR Ventures, and TaylorMade Golf Company. The venues feature two 18-hole putting courses created from the vision of Tiger Woods and his TGR design team, according to Popstroke. Also included is a full-service restaurant and bar, outdoor dining area, various outdoor games, a playground, and an ice cream parlor. The venues use premium tailor-made rental putters and special edition tailor-made golf balls for customers to use on the course and take home with them as souvenirs. The golf entertainment company has venues under construction in Scottsdale, Arizona, Delray Beach, Florida, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, with another expected to break ground in Las Vegas. As for San Antonio, it is not clear when the venue is expected to open or where, but the company has indicated it will begin construction this year. Popstroke already has a location outside Houston. The company said it will also open locations in North Dallas and College Station. Our next article is titled Hotel with 151 Rooms is Planned Near the Pearl by Madison Isler. Pearl owner Silver Ventures is planning to build a 151-room hotel on a site across the San Antonio River from the redeveloped brewery. Oxbow Development Group's hotel at 1210 East Elmira Street will include 13,500 square feet of meeting space for events and conferences, a lobby bar, rooftop bar, and pool deck that will be open to the public. It will be the second hotel developed by the company. The other is the luxury 146-room Hotel Emma at the Pearl, which became one of San Antonio's tiniest lodgings when it opened in 2015. There is ample demand for rooms at Hotel Emma, particularly on weekends, said Oxbow CEO Bill Schoen. It is one of only two hotels in Texas to receive a 5-diamond designation from AAA, a rating system that reflects the level of services, amenities, and style at a hotel. The new hotel on Elmira will have a lower price point and will not be a 5-diamond property, Schoen said. It is an opportunity to create more rooms, create more availability for people to come to the Pearl, and create more meeting space, he said. He declined to disclose the hotel's projected development cost. Construction is expected to begin early next year and take roughly 2 years to complete. Oxbow is an independent subsidiary of Silver Ventures, the private equity firm owned by billionaire and former salsa magnate Christopher Kit Goldsberry. The company is working on several other projects across the river where Silver Ventures owns about 10.4 acres and within Pearl boundaries. The company is converting the Pearl Stable event venue into a concert locale and the Samuels Glass Company building at 221 Newell Avenue into a market with restaurants, offices, and storage. Both are expected to open in early 2024. Oxbow also is building an apartment complex at 1126 East Elmira Street with 263 units, commercial space, and parking, and developing a 4,500 square foot food and beverage spot next door at 101 Newell Avenue. Both are slated to be finished late next year. The company also plans to demolish an industrial building at 102 East Josephine Street and replace it with 250 to 275 apartments and parking, offices, retail space, and a rooftop bar. That project is expected to start in the second quarter of next year and take about 2 years to finish. Our next article is titled "Frostbank is Beating Estimates" by Patrick Danner. While the recent failures of two banks and troubles at others triggered some nervousness among many depositors, the head of Frostbank sent a message Thursday that the largest regional bank based in San Antonio is safe and sound. Phil Green, chairman and CEO of Frostbank parent Colin Frost Bankers Incorporated, said during a conference call regarding its latest quarterly results that the bank began March with 20% of its deposit base held in a checking account at the Federal Reserve. This not only served to protect depositors, it also allowed us to take direct benefit from Federal Reserve interest rate increases as they continue to fight inflation, he said. By sharing these benefits with our depositors throughout this upward rate cycle, I'm convinced we build not only balances but also trust with our deposit customers. In an interview, Green said Frost did not need to seek any funding outside the normal course of business. Other banks have had to take Federal Home Loan Bank advances or access wholesale funding, for example. It was business as usual, and we had everything we needed to take care of our customers, he said. Colin Frost Bankers once again surpassed analyst consensus earnings estimate for the first quarter, a feat that is starting to sound like a broken record. It earns $176 million, or $2.70 a share, in the 3 months ended March 31st. It was expected to earn $2.55 a share based on the average estimate of 16 analysts polled by Yahoo Finance. The bank holding company earned $97.4 million, or $1.50 a share, in the same period last year. Profits are up 80% versus last year, Green said. That is not a bad thing. Frost generated $530.9 million in revenue, a 42% increase over the $373.6 million posted a year ago. Investors reacted positively to the results as Colin Frost shares climbed $6.80, or nearly 6.6%, to close Thursday at $110.27. Frost remains one of the biggest beneficiaries of higher interest rates, said Brady Gailey, an analyst with Keefe, Bruyette & Woods in Atlanta. It has been tough to estimate how positive of an impact this has been. They had another great, great quarter. The failures of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank last month created a lot of fear and uncertainty in depositors' minds, spurring deposit outflows at banks across the nation, he said. Frost reported a nearly 5% drop in deposits in the first quarter. Deposits fell to $42.2 billion as of March 31st, down from $44.4 billion a year ago. Green attributed a lot of the decline to depositors chasing higher returns elsewhere. Gailey said Frost was ready for a decline. They have one of the safest, most liquid balance sheets with a ton of capital, he said, so they were positioned among the best out of any regional bank out there. The level of cash that Colin Frost had on its balance sheet is well above average. Frost registered solid loan growth, propelling revenue in the first quarter. It ended the period with almost $17.5 billion in loans on its books, a 5.7% increase from a year ago when it had $16.5 billion. The bank's net interest margin, a measure of the difference between what it earns in interest on loans and what it pays in interest on deposits, continues to climb at a good clip. The margin was 3.47% at the end of the quarter, up from 2.33% a year ago and 3.31% at the end of last year. Colin Frost turned a significantly higher profit even though non-interest expenses rose 19% from a year ago, primarily on higher wages, salaries, and benefits as it expands in Dallas and Houston. It reported $285.1 million in non-interest expense in the recent quarter compared with $238.7 million a year ago. Frost recently disclosed that Green received total compensation of almost $6.4 million last year, a more than 22% increase from 2022 when he received about $5.2 million. His compensation amounted to 92 times the almost $70,000 in median compensation of the company's employees. Our next article is titled Starship Could Be Grounded for Months by Eric Killilea. SpaceX's Starship test launch last week from South Texas sparked a 3.5-acre fire, spread debris over hundreds of acres of company-owned and state park land, and propelled a pulverized concrete more than 6 miles, a federal agency said on Wednesday. Separately, a spokesman for the Federal Aviation Administration said Starship could be grounded for several months as its investigation is completed. In its statement, the Texas Division of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said the liftoff severely damaged the launch pad, sending concrete, steel, and other objects thousands of feet into the air. Impacts from the launch include numerous large concrete chunks, stainless steel sheets, metal, and other objects hurled thousands of feet away along with a plume cloud of pulverized concrete that deposited material up to 6.5 miles northwest of the pad site, the Wildlife Service said in a statement. Debris was found in Boca Chica State Park, which is managed by the service as a part of the Lower Rio Grande National Wildlife Refuge. It said it has found no evidence of dead birds or other wildlife. The fire was south of the launch pad in the state park. Residents of Port Isabel, which was in the path of the dust plume, said they were not prepared either to feel the launch or for the grime and dust that soon began raining on them and sent students at Garriga Elementary School running inside. Test launch sparked fire, rain debris over more than 6 miles. Everything was rattling like an earthquake. The noise was ridiculous, said Sharon Almaguer, a 61-year-old lawyer who was in town with her mother. It was like a dusty snow, but it was brown. It was everywhere. The fallout across the region occurred when Elon Musk's private space company launched its next-generation rocket system on its first test flight from the company's Starbase facility at Boca Chica. Though the rocket successfully cleared its launch tower and climbed to an altitude of about 24 miles, the vehicle spun out of control and SpaceX said it was forced to blow it up over the Gulf of Mexico for public safety. The rocket, the world's most powerful, blasted a crater beneath the launch mount, which was severely damaged. SpaceX did not respond to requests for comment this week. The Wildlife Service is in communication with SpaceX and other agencies to provide on-the-ground guidance to minimize further impacts and reduce long-term damages to natural resources, said Aubrey Buzek, an agency spokeswoman. And the FAA, which announced after the launch that it would be conducting a mishap investigation, said Wednesday that Starship could be grounded for months as it pieces together what happened. While Musk has said his private space company could be ready to launch again as early as next month from South Texas, an FAA spokesman said that will not happen until the agency determines that any system, process, or procedure related to the mishap does not affect public safety. Some mishap investigations might conclude in a matter of weeks, he said. More complex investigations might take several months. The agency is legally responsible for protecting the public and private property from damage during launches. The FAA will be involved in every step of the process and will review and must approve the final report before the mishap investigation can be closed, he said, noting that the National Transportation Safety Board and National Aeronautics and Space Administration are official observers to the investigation. Our next article is titled NRG Says Bill May Curb Power Sites by Kyra Buckley. NRG Energy, one of the state's largest producers of electricity, is warning lawmakers in Austin that changes to a plan to secure the Texas grid against the sort of power outages that occurred during the February 2021 freeze could cause it to rethink construction of additional power generation facilities. Senate Bill 6, which has passed the Senate and is being debated in the House, would authorize construction of state-funded natural gas-fired power plants that could be cranked up for emergencies. The bill diverges from the Performance Credit Mechanism plan approved by the state's Public Utility Commission earlier this year and is backed by the industry, which would pay certain electricity generators a credit for having plants ready to go when demand surges. If the legislator ends up saying, no, we're going to do a state-sponsored generation, said Chris Moser, Executive Vice President and Head of Competitive Markets and Policy at NRG, then as that bill is written right now, we do not qualify to build that state-sponsored generation. So we are not going to be investing private capital to compete against the state of Texas. Houston-based NRG is in the latter stages of development on a nearly 700-megawatt natural gas unit to be built in the state and is looking at adding two smaller units in the Houston area, Moser said. If those three projects are completed, he said, it would add about 1,500 megawatts of new generation in the state. 1 megawatt is enough to power about 200 Texas homes on a hot summer day, according to the state's grid operator. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has made SB 6 a priority. Supporters say it would ensure that Texas has ready-to-go electricity generation the few times a year when demand threatens to outpace the supply of electricity on the grid. Opponents, including trade groups representing natural gas and coal-fired power plants, as well as renewable energy advocates, say it would hurt the state's competitive electricity market and could cost the public as much as $18 billion. Large power producers such as NRG and the state's other two large electricity generators, Vistra and Calpine, support the Public Utility Commission's plan, which would pay generators a credit for being available during certain times of peak power demand. Texas is in a very unique position because they are trying to answer a question that no one has had to answer yet, Moser said, and that is, how much dispatchable generation do you need? Dispatchable means power generation with an on and off switch. In Texas, it often refers to natural gas fired plants, as well as coal and nuclear, and typically excludes wind and solar power, which require the wind to blow or the sun to shine to generate electricity. As more renewable energy comes onto the grid, less fossil fuel generated electricity is used. To feed spikes in demand during the extreme weather events, the state wants to incentivize the building and maintenance of dispatchable generation that can turn on when it's dark and the air is still. Moser said building a natural gas plant typically costs between $800,000 and $1 million per megawatt of installed generation capacity. That means a 700-megawatt plant can cost as much as $700 million to construct. Electricity generators in Texas are only paid for the electricity they provide and are not compensated for simply being available. The performance credit mechanism aimed to address that in part. Opponents of the PCM plan say it's a wall back of the state's competitive market that could increase residential and industrial electricity bills, but because there is no mandate to use the credits to build new generation, may not help reliability. The fear is when you start to introduce administrative aspects into these types of markets that they become less efficient, Joshua Rhodes, a research scientist at the University of Texas at Austin, said. And when they become less efficient, that means we pay more. But the PUC-endorsed plan is not set in stone. In addition to SB 6, lawmakers are considering SB 2012, which would put a nearly $500 million cap on the program and sunset it after 8 years. SB 2012 has passed the Senate and is being debated in the House's State Affairs Committee. Large electricity generators in Texas testified against SB 2012, and Moser at NRG said its passage would also lead the company to cancel its plans to build more natural gas-fired generation. The proposals in SB 2012 would likely render the PUC's Performance Credit Mechanism plan ineffective, UT Rhodes said. But he is watching to see how all the proposed legislation could impact the state's explosive renewable industry, as well as expected impact to consumer bills. Basically, it comes down to are we getting the reliability we want for the best price, Rhodes said, or are we overpaying for it? Our next article is titled, NuStar Sells Headquarters for $103 Million But Will Stay Put, by Madison Isler. NuStar Energy has sold its Northside headquarters to Truist Financial Corporation for $103 million, but the oil pipeline and terminal operator is not moving. The company will rent the real estate from an affiliate of Charlotte, North Carolina-based Truist in a transaction known as a sale leaseback and use the proceeds to pay off outstanding debt. The proceeds from this transaction will strengthen our balance sheet and go toward our continued efforts to improve our financial strength and flexibility, NuStar said in a statement. It will provide opportunities for future borrowing to repurchase its units or for other purposes. NuStar will pay an average annual rent of $8.2 million during its initial 20-year lease, with two options to extend the term for 10 years each, according to a filing last month with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The company moved into its 319,000-square-foot headquarters off I-10 north of the Rim Shopping in 2012. It acquired about 37 acres there in 2010. NuStar had a profit of $92 million in the 3 months through December, $75 million after adjustments for one-time items, and its Permian pipeline system handled record volumes of 584,000 barrels per day. NuStar said it expects full-year profits of $202 million to $240 million, compared with $222 million for all of 2022. It closed the year with debt of $3.3 billion. It has been working to reduce debt, and the lease buyback enables it to make money from a non-earning asset, it said. In this climate of high interest rates and with some capital markets still not accessible to master limited partnerships, this provides us with a less costly method of generating capital compared to other financing techniques and demonstrates our commitment to being good stewards of our resources, NuStar said. Our next article is titled San Antonio Builder Plans Second Project in Austin by Richard Webner. 7 months after the San Antonio real estate firm started construction of what's expected to become the tallest skyscraper in Texas, the 74-story, 1,022-foot-tall waterline tower downtown has revealed plans for a Goliath master plan development facing the Colorado River on the Near East Side. Kairoi is asking the city of Austin to rezone 115.7 acres between US 183 and the river, where it wants to build a mixed-use neighborhood with staggering amounts of residential and office space. The project would include 22,219 residential units and nearly 3.4 million square feet of office space, about 184,000 square feet of restaurant space, a 127,000-square-foot shopping plaza, about 20,600 square feet of strip retail, and a 385-room hotel, according to a traffic analysis document attached to the zoning application. For comparison, the Pearls campus in San Antonio spans 23 acres and contains 654 residential units, with several hundred more in the works. And at the end of last year, San Antonio's Central Business District included nearly 7.8 million square feet of office space, According to Transwestern, a commercial real estate firm, about 2.25 times what Kairoi wants to build. Its project would span 2 properties that are currently the sites of concrete processing facilities according to the zoning documents. They are about 3 miles east of Austin's booming downtown and just across the highway from the rapidly growing neighborhoods of the city's Near East Side. We are very excited about our project at Bulm Road in East Austin, said Michael Lynn Jr., Kairoi's CEO. It is extremely rare to have that much land that close to downtown with tremendous Colorado River frontage. The land has amazing natural attributes, and there is incredible potential to develop a unique mixed-use project that embraces nature. The project is currently in the pre-development phase, he said in an email response to questions. Tony Kerb, the company's senior vice president of development, is leading the planning process along with the Austin team of Lake Flato, the San Antonio-based architecture firm. 2 zoning applications, one for each of the properties, were filed in the first week of April, according to the City of Austin's website. Kairoi is seeking to have the zoning change from limited industrial uses to that of a planned development agreement. The properties are currently owned by a Lexington, Kentucky-based company named APAC Texas Incorporated, according to the Travis Central Appraisal District. Kairoi does not yet know when the construction will be complete, Lynn said. He did not respond to a question about the project's cost. The project will also feature a roughly 21,000-square-foot arts theater, an 8,500-square-foot music venue, and a 37,400-square-foot civic center that will function as part of the hotel, according to the traffic impact analysis. The 74-story waterline under construction at 98 Red River Street near Austin's Rainy Street Bar Hopping District is expected to be complete in late 2026. The tower will feature 352 luxury apartments, 700,000 square feet of office space, and a 251-room hotel. At 1,022 feet high, it will be 20 feet taller than the J.P. Morgan Chase Tower in downtown Houston, which is currently the tallest in Texas. Kairoi is building the waterline in partnership with Lincoln Property Company, a development firm from Dallas. Kairoi and Lincoln previously teamed up to build the 6 in Guadalupe, a 66-story building with housing, retail, and offices, which is expected to be complete later this year. In 2021, Meta, the parent company of Facebook, signed a lease for 33 floors of the 6 in Guadalupe Tower, but it later decided to sublease the space rather than occupy it itself, according to reporting from the Austin Business Journal. Kairoi has built over other large-scale projects in Austin, including Bowie, a 37-story high-rise that it completed in 2004 and sold in 2017, according to its website. In San Antonio, it has built low-rise apartment complexes such as Tribute at the Rim and Ranch at Chavano Park. You have been listening to business news on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Vanessa saying goodbye from Owl Radio.